This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You, where we feature libertarian candidates working to make your life better by downsizing big government and expanding your freedom. I'm Arvin Vora, guest hosting today for Carla Howell. For the second half of our show, we'll bring on Mark Harold, libertarian running for Congress in Virginia's 11th District. Mark Harold is an attorney. He is a partner in Ferreira and Harold PLLC, an immigration law firm. He was a prosecutor with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. He served with the Atlanta Police Department. His final assignment was with the now disbanded narcotics unit, Red Dog. He is the author of Observations of White Noise, an Acid Test for the First Amendment. He was the co-author with Ron Reichlach of Mississippi Criminal Trial Practice. He has appeared on the Fox News Channel, CNN, HLN, True TV, BBC America, Canada CTV, RTV, RT, and Court TV. He graduated from Clemson University with a degree in political science. He graduated with honors from the University of Mississippi School of Law. He served there on the Mississippi Law Journal and the Journal of National Security Law. His website is Mark Harold, the number 4, and Congress.com. That's Mark Harold for Congress.com. Mark, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Let's get started. What inspired you to run for office?
Well, as anyone listening can tell, I've worked, like a lot of people, I think a lot of libertarians and a lot of the voters in the Virginia 11th, I've either worked for government now, or I've had a lot of dealings with government as a contractor, as somebody who knows the inner workings of government in several different levels, for me, city, state, and federal. And it's just time. The government has grown so large. And as I say, it's at this point, you've heard too big to fail. The government's too big to succeed. It cannot succeed in the function set forth in the Constitution because it does everything else. And when we get to that point where we've let the government grow exponentially, and again, in case folks don't know, the Virginia 11th is Northern Virginia. We border D.C. We're right outside D.C. and Metro connected. So the Virginia 11th, we really see how exponentially government has grown. And I'm counting on the fact that a lot of the Virginia 11th voters who worked for government or have worked for government have seen the sausage made and are really going to want to go in a different direction.
As someone who both my parents were civil servants, I grew up knowing about the inefficiency and impracticality of government, and that's one of the main reasons that I became a libertarian. Let's actually talk about some of your specific policy points, some of the specific things that you want to do. Where do you stand? One of the big issues right now that's been growing in terms of popularity and growing in terms of focus is the war on drugs. You obviously having a pretty close proximity for a long period of time to this particular war. What's your take on it?
Well, the war on drugs is a failure. The war on drugs is a war on America's own citizens. And It's totally shifted the prioritization of law enforcement away from victim crime, violent crime, especially crimes against children. It has really shifted everything. The money, the grant money, the block money has all gone towards drugs. And for the last 20 or so years, really starting with Richard Nixon and the Controlled Substance Act of 1970, but especially Ronald Reagan and even into the Clinton administration, this war on drugs is where the money is, whether it's asset forfeiture or just the grant money. And local police departments, state police departments, everyone's geared up, and it's turned into what Radley Balco calls the warrior cop syndrome, where cops are not peacekeepers anymore. They don't focus on crimes where the victim, they go after drugs. And it's eviscerated our Fourth Amendment. If we would end the drug war, we would see that penal resources, law enforcement resources could be on violent crimes, crimes against children. Border violence would decrease exponentially, and young people who just possess marijuana wouldn't have a criminal record for life. And I can say from personal experience with my mother needing medical marijuana and not being able to get it, actually having to use a synthetic of medical marijuana, which makes no sense at all since the medical marijuana, the actual marijuana is not as bad for you as the synthetic. But nobody makes as much money off it, I guess. Not being able to get medical marijuana. We need to end the drug war, and we need to do it now. Also, the Fourth Amendment, the case law since the 70s, mainly in the 80s, has eviscerated the Fourth Amendment. And most of those cases that do great damage to the Fourth Amendment are cases involving drug enforcement. So we need to end the drug war now. And, you know, if I have the pleasure to serve in Congress, I'll take every step I can to minimize especially federal involvement with the DEA and bring us back to some sanity. This administration has done absolutely nothing. Medical marijuana raids are still going on, and there's been no decrease in the focus on drugs. And when you focus on one thing, you can't focus on anything else or everything else. And we have been so myopic in law enforcement for probably the last quarter decade on drugs, and it's a victimless crime.
And so what you're actually saying is that if we end the drug war, we would actually then be making people safer because law enforcement could actually focus on the violent crimes with victims instead of focusing on, you know, these victimless behaviors.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, everyone always says, well, what about, you know, you say something about this, what about people getting high and driving, flying an airplane? Look, people should be prosecuted or held criminally liable when they victimize other people, when they harm other people. So I'm not talking about conduct that may stem or you may do while you're under the influence of drugs. That's where personal responsibility comes in. People will be safer, and they'll be safer for two main reasons. The first reason is the police will be able to focus on crimes with victims. In other words, they won't be out chasing people with marijuana. They'll actually be looking for people who harm other people. The other thing is that our penal resources can be reallocated. For instance, basically, and that's a round number, if somebody will challenge me on it, it's a very round number, about 70% of sex offenders are on some type of supervised release. That means to put people who possess marijuana in jail, in many cases, especially like we see in California with the overcrowding, we're letting a sex offender out on the street who may victimize children. So when you look at it that way, that decreases safety. There are individuals who should be incarcerated, and they should be incarcerated. And the people that are just smoking weed basically should be let out. It just doesn't make any sense, and it also fuels the private prison industry and makes bed space a commodity, which gives law enforcement in many cases with drugs and traffic enforcement have just become another layer of tax collectors.
Sure, absolutely. There's another argument to be made over there, which is that the prohibition has driven up the cost of drugs so high that that itself has actually fueled the violence that's associated right now with drugs.
Yeah, you know, there's no mystery here, and I'm certainly not talking. I have a lot of friends who are police officers from my old days and even now. I'm not talking about police officers who do a good job. I'm talking about the entire systemic way that law enforcement is geared. But, yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. When you prohibit something, you make it cost more. The black market creates the market. And when you talk about drugs, I mean, you know, this is nothing new. Look, we saw prohibition, you know, basically built the mafia. I mean, bootlegging was the it did. And the crack cocaine epidemic basically built a lot of the gang culture. So there's no doubt that, you know, my experience as an immigration prosecutor, border violence, a ton of the border violence. Look, people get killed bringing money and drugs across the border. If it's not, you know, illegal to bring drugs in or people can have drugs, you're not going to see the same type of border violence. And, you know, you first start clearly with marijuana. One of the biggest things, you know, I would do immediately would be to spur marijuana should not be a Schedule I drug. It's simply not. Schedule I drug is supposed to have, in the Controlled Substance Act, no medicinal value and high potential for addiction. And marijuana is just the opposite of that. And it's there for social reasons, and it's absolutely been misplaced. It's not just that it shouldn't be there. It's intellectually dishonest to have it there because the law, as bad as it is, clearly sets forth the schedules. And this has just been a sham since the 1970 to include marijuana there. It cannot be intellectually defended.
And you've actually, though, actually talked about taking it a step further, which is actually working to sponsor legislation to end the entire drug war, just to make sure that's correct.
Absolutely. Look, you know, when you have something called, you have this war, you have to ask after 30 years, who's winning? Look, drugs are a problem in people's lives. I'm not saying that drugs are always have a good effect on people's lives. It should be like, obviously there are people who have addictions, but this is more of a healthcare issue. And when you treat it more like alcohol, when you treat people humanely, when somebody who has victimized nobody has an addiction, you know, there may be, they should have rehab, they should have other opportunities, but bottom line is that just incarcerating them serves no purpose. Individuals who victimize other people should be punished, but victimless crime should not be punished. People through personal responsibility may have to get help if they feel that they need it. But the drug war is also, you know, law enforcement should basically be a state and local operation. Federal law enforcement only exploded with the FBI, starting with kidnapping, and has expanded with guns and drugs. the federal government, to stay relevant in law enforcement, passes laws so that they can go out and enforce them. And any of these types of laws are better suited to the states from a federalism point of view. The federal government, the states can pretty much do, and there's a lot of bad things states do, but as a generalization, states can pretty much do anything unless the Constitution says they can't. The federal mm-hmm. government can only do what the Constitution says it can do. And something mm-hmm. like drug enforcement is simply not in the purview of the federal government. They should stay out of it.
You've actually, before we get to the break, I want to at least introduce this idea. You've talked a lot about the Fourth Amendment and all that. Where do you stand in terms of NSA government surveillance?
Well, we have a doctrine, many of the listeners will be, knowledgeable about it or know about it, called posse comitatus. It's one of the oldest doctrines that we have. Basically says the military may not operate on domestic soil. Now, there's a little exception with the National Guard, but generally, the military cannot operate domestically. We need that in the intelligence community. I think we have 18 different intelligence communities. We need one. It needs to be transparent, and we need protections from the NSA and other intelligence gathering agencies that are mandated by Congress to operate internationally. We've blurred the lines between law enforcement and intelligence gathering in this country, and it's been to the detriment of our civil rights, but we need one agency to do intelligence. The NSA has grown like everything else. One of the things we need to do, one of the things I would do immediately, would be to propose amending, and I will say this, we've had the 18th Amendment was knocked out, prohibition by the 21st. We've never amended an amendment, so there's some constitutional construction issues with it, but we mm-hmm. need to amend the Fourth Amendment so it's searches, seizures, and surveillance. The okay. way that the Fourth Amendment's been interpreted by the Supreme Court, the searches and seizures, when the Fourth Amendment applies, when the protections applies, does not extend very well to surveillance, especially when we're in public, or to the data mining of that surveillance. The Fourth sure. Amendment needs to say searches, seizures, and surveillance, and that's one of the things I would work to do from day one.
I think that's an extremely powerful message that'll really make it very clear where you and where many other libertarians stand on the NSA and in terms of government surveillance, that we really recognize that the Fourth Amendment protection should absolutely extend to surveillance as well as a search and seizure. We've been talking with Mark Harold, Libertarian for Congress running in Virginia's 11th District. His website is markharoldforcongress.com, and that's the number 4, Mark Harold, number 4, Congress. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party. And please join the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. You can choose to get active, meet great libertarians in your area, and learn ways that you can get involved. Help us and Mark Harold downsize big government. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, guest hosting today for Carla Howell. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
It's time to take a new look at some of life's changing moments. It's time to listen to an expert who has been there and can provide insight through experience, studies, and enlightening guests. Tune in to Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets. Host Lindsay Levinson takes a look at relationships, parenting, health and wellness, divorce, depression, sexuality, philanthropy, and mental health. You'll look at everything you know in a different way. Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets, airs Wednesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm Arvind Vora, guest hosting today for Carla Howell. We're talking with Mark Harold, the Libertarian candidate running for Congress in Virginia's 11th District. His website is markharoldforcongress.com, and that's M-A-R-C-H-A-R-R-O-L-D, the number 4, and then congress.com. Mark, in the last segment, we talked a lot about the NSA, government surveillance, and ending the war on drugs. In addition to these domestic sort of wars and incursions and sort of paramilitary behavior, we have quite a few military actions going on overseas. We have a lot of military actions, some that are technically not formally declared war, but really seem to have all the trappings thereof. What is your take on our current military actions?
Well, we're way overextended. I'm certainly not an isolationist. To me, isolationism means that you just put your head in the sand. You don't know what's going on. Problem with that is if you're a total isolationist is you can't detect the threats that you need to respond to. I'm a non-interventionalist, and it goes back to the same types of focus that we talked about before. When the government tries to do too much, it doesn't do anything or the things that it's supposed to do under the Constitution well. The Department of Defense needs to be the Department of Only Defense. And cutting military spending and cutting defense spending are not the same thing. Defense spending is about what we need to spend to make this country safe. And, of course, that is a role of the federal government. I don't think anyone denies that. But it needs to go back to the provisions of the Constitution about a standing army and navy and the fact that it's supposed to be defensive. And we need to focus, just like we need to focus other areas in law enforcement other than drugs, we need to get away from these foreign bases. You know, over 150 countries we've got active duty military, way too many bases. We need to bring these folks home. We never leave anywhere. In the only country we go to war, we never leave. We're still in Korea. We have troops in Italy, Germany, all these places. It's just not clear why we're there. But again, the Department of Defense needs to be the Department of Defense. And, you know, just like with the NSA, people say, well, you're being naive. There's threats out there. Of course they are. And the military focused on defense only is going to allow us to focus on those threats. And we need to do it in a way, of course, that we don't infringe upon our civil liberties, like we need to do everything. But we are way overextended. I'm not an isolationist, non-interventionalism. And most people would say non-interventionalism because you don't care or because you just want to, you know, you just don't want to be there. Look, non-interventionalism leads to better security for this country because we're going to be focusing nonstop. The Department of Defense is going to be the Department of Only Defense nonstop on this country's defense, which is what they're supposed to do. You know, it's kind of strange because you say these things and people act like, well, why would you think that? Why would I think that our military is supposed to protect me? I think that's the core of our military. That's what you know. And it's been repackaged, you know, the Navy, a global force for good. Look, the Navy is not a global force for good. They may do good things, you know, when they're out there and all, but that's not the role of the Navy, to be a global force for good. The Navy is supposed to be, as in the Constitution, the standing Navy, is to protect this country. So we've we've repackaged our military into this sort of roving entity that has all these, you know, touches on all these other countries and does all these other things. The role of the military needs to be defensive. And again, cutting military spending does not necessarily mean cutting defense spending. I'd never make any cut that puts people in this country in danger. But we are overextended. Any time we overextend in government, we, like I said, we're too big to succeed. We're way too big to succeed at the very narrow functions of the federal government, and defense is one of them.
I mean, that I think really makes a lot of sense, and I think that when you put it that way, that when we're focusing on things other than defense, we're not actually able to properly focus on defense, really makes a pretty compelling case for actually reducing military spending and really having the Department of Defense focus entirely on defense only. If you are elected, what bills will you sponsor? What actions would you take that would translate some of this belief into some kind of an action that the voters can understand?
Okay. Well, first of all, the War Powers Act needs to be completely redrafted. The War Powers Act is very simple. You really don't need a separate law. The War Powers Act is the Congress declares war. Okay, that's the War Powers Act, as the Founding Fathers put it. Okay, it's not that hard. Now, is there going to be a situation where we're under immediate attack, and of course the President's Commander-in-Chief would need to respond in real time as an exigency? Of course, but we have a lot of areas of law that there's provisions for exigency. The War Powers Act needs to state that nothing other than direct defense in real time, within a couple of days, right now it's like 90 days, it should be much shorter than that, Congress must declare war or it simply cannot fund military action. It just simply can't do it. The War Powers Act needs to be written in terms that instead of expanding the role of the executive branch, what it needs to do is limit the executive branch. It needs to clearly vest, and this isn't something that I'm way out there on, the idea that I would clearly vest the, you know, declaration of war with the Congress, that's right in the, you know, the Constitution. It's one of those expressed powers. You know, a lot of these things, you know, when you say these things, people look at you because we've been beaten down. We've come to accept these things as reality because, well, that's how it's been for so long. But again, when the government expands and expands and expands, they beat people down. The War Powers Act is pretty clear. Congress declares war. Everything else, very minor, narrow legislation needs to be there to protect this country in real time. Other than that, and we've seen it. Look, it's like there should never be a draft and there never should be a draft. Why? We don't need it. Okay? When we've been attacked and this country needs to mobilize and take war effort, we've never had to draft. People show up, people line up. You never have to draft if the will of the people want to go to war. You'll never have to draft. And that's why the executive branch has to do this. Congress, you know, gives the president too much authority. They keep funding it, but they don't take responsibility for it. There's no such thing. An undeclared war is an unconstitutional war, and we should never be in an unconstitutional war. We give up our own constitutional liberties to go out there and get in these military incursions, and they're not about this nation's defense.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful message right there. I mean, if you look historically, every time that America has been attacked, there's been an excess of people trying to go at rushing to the defense of this country, because for all of its shortcomings, you know, there's a lot of patriotism, and people will defend their homeland when it's appropriate. And it's really only when the federal government gets involved in areas that just don't make any sense and have no popularity because they're kind of counterproductive and foolish that any of these things even begin to become necessary. Just to make sure, I really want to talk about some of these really specific things before the close of the show, just so that people know exactly where you stand and that you are willing to put actions on the line. In terms of ending the drug war, you've said that you are willing to sponsor direct legislation to completely end the drug war. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, first of all, you have to remember that just getting rid of all the federal laws doesn't mean no laws will exist. But the federal drug war, absolutely. The states should be limited, in my opinion, in what they do. But there's absolutely no constitutional basis for this type of intervention and the level that we have done with the drug war. So, yes, you got to remember, when you're dealing with people who have addiction, they're sick. To declare war on them is counterproductive. Okay, the idea is to make people well, not to just rehabilitate them in a criminal sense. And so personal responsibility comes in. But the idea that the federal government needs to be at war on its own citizens since 1970 and putting so many, first of all, people who suffer can't get medicine they need, basically. That's ironic. But so many people are saddled with criminal record. So many people for drug offenses are disenfranchised. And we have totally altered our Fourth Amendment structure, and it's been eviscerated because drug enforcement has led to a lot of Supreme Court decisions that really, you know, it's sort of a pockmarked Fourth Amendment at this point. One of the big casualties of the war on drugs has been our Fourth Amendment.
And that's actually something that you also addressed early in their show, that you would actually extend the Fourth Amendment to very specifically cover surveillance, so there's no question in anybody's mind.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And what you're talking about when you do that is, it's not that, see, everyone thinks that you're talking about a very black and white distinction. What you're talking about is, it would make it so that surveillance had to be reasonable, and it would extend the warrant preference where you have to have a warrant unless very narrow exceptions apply to surveillance. That doesn't mean if there's something going on right now and a child has been abducted that you can't use certain surveillance technologies. Mm-hmm. It just means there has to be an exigency. It has to be reasonable. But without that, we don't have those protections. And the government is never going to protect your rights for you. And, you know, so many people say, well, you don't understand, there's danger out there. Of course there is. There are dangers out there, and we need to protect ourselves. But, you know, great cultures, a bad paraphrase of the quote, you know, great cultures aren't murdered. Great countries aren't murdered. They commit suicide. And what's happening is, if to defend ourselves from those who wish to harm us, we dilute our own powers. We give up our own civil liberties. Then those people have won, whether they attack us again or not. And it's sort
absolutely.
Of the old, you know, if you cut down all the trees looking for the devil, nowhere to hide when the devil comes looking for you. And I'm telling you, it's through, we have to be vigilant. And libertarian
absolutely.
Solutions, it's not a deal where you're just saying government should be small just for the sake of being small. Government should be limited, and the federal government to the Constitution. But there are real libertarian advantages, like we said.
Absolutely.
It's not just that if the military gets smaller, defense will get better. I know that sounds
sure.
ironic, but it's true.
Well, we have been talking with Mark Harold, libertarian running for Congress in Virginia's 11th District. His website is markharoldforcongress.com. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party so that we can help you stay safer, more free, and less taxed. Please join the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. Help us and Mark Harold cut your taxes and make government small. That's lp.org and Facebook page, facebook.com/libertarians. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.